Howdy y'all, how you doing today? It's your host, Oscar Moran, back on our little podcast series. Now, today I have diving into a little special topic here, Temptation and God, a Civil War deep dive. Now, soldiers during this time period, being placed in America during the Civil War, were able to maintain faith in God despite the horrors of war because of the accessibility to the church and family. Now, today on the show, I have a special little guest here. His name's Henry Moran. He happens to be my very own brother. How you doing, Henry?
Good. Thank you for inviting me on the show. It's a real honor to be invited on the show. Can we jump right into a question?
Yes, we can. Give me one. Come on. Pop one off.
How was the soldiers' faith tested on the battlefield?
Well, that's a great question, Henry. Let me dive right into that. Now, I read this great little article called The Meaning of Life in the Valley of Death. It's by Mr. Stephen Woodworth. And in that article, he had a great quote, which just, you know, exemplified that topic. He said it wasn't surprising considering that the hastily formed armies were composed of young men from varied backgrounds thrown together. The faithful with the faithless and the church with the unchurched. That just shows, you know, it's a great prime example of how these diverse groups of young soldiers are being thrown together just because of their township and where they were located. And during this time, there was an abundance of new temptations. It's the last place one would expect to find a strong interest in religion, which was true for the first year of the war. A lot of these soldiers fell into the trap of, you know, the temptations of card playing, gambling, drinking, cursing, or wenching, all which would be greatly frowned upon by their family. And, you know, them being separated from the restraints and influences of family and community, it was just very easily for them. It's very easy for them to be tempted into forbidden activities. And during the first years of the war, the negative effects or temptations, they just were very prominent. All the soldiers fell right into that trap. And it's shown the trends from the first year and the second year. The second year, the soldiers came back to God, and they just started to worship more, which is a very interesting observation.
Thank you for that response, Oscar. Well, how was the faith implemented on the battlefield?
It's another great question, Henry. Now, another great article that I reviewed was Spiritualized Warfare. It's by Edward J. Blum. You might want to check it out. It's honestly a very interesting read. Now, he quotes saying, as the nation fell apart by as brother killed brother, as pastors preached politics, and as politicians struggled with spirituality, all these people turned to God and God's activities to comprehend their words. Now, on the battlefield, soldiers believed that through God, their sins of gambling and other temptations were being cleansed. So, as soldiers praised the Lord in victory, they, you know, were just like, hey, thank you, God, we just won. And in defeat, they believed that they were being punished for previous sins, so they were being cleansed. And, a lot of these soldiers looked at it as a way of coping with the war and believing it was all a part of God's plan, which was very interesting. Now, on the battlefield, there are many different, you know, types of faith being implemented. Pastors, and there were volunteer soldiers that, you know, also pastors came, and they went and preached to the soldiers to try to help faith. And it was just very interesting to see all that in, you know, these types of scenarios.
Oscar, I 100% agree with your response. Give me some examples of lost faith on the battlefield.
Well, that's another good one. Another great article I read was The Battleground of Virtue by Charles W. Gould. And he quoted saying, most of the young men who rushed to enlist in the Union Army in the spring and summer of 1861 soon found themselves in army camps with little to do but drill. And while they waited for battle, that always seemed to loom right over the horizon. Forced inactivity and the prospect of an uncertain future led many soldiers to seek diversion, often in the form of drinking and card playing. That's another great example of how soldiers' faith were tested, and it seemed that a lot of them had succumbed, don't you agree?
Yeah.
It took a man of strong conviction to remain faithful to the Christian principles and to shun those activities to be considered, you know, enjoyable. Some of the soldiers that were listed into the war, they just were regular old Christian good boys. But during their time, they succumbed to the temptations of war. And it was, you know, another quote was, "The men here are the roughest kind. Gambling, fighting, swearing seem to be the principal amusement. Little thinking that a vast number of them will never see home again. There are two rows of guards, men attempting to go by them, occasionally get stabbed." It's just shown that a lot of the men during this war, they changed, like, greatly through all the temptations. You know, they started off regular good Christian boys, like we said, and they immediately just turned into these rough kind of man. Just completely something you would not expect from a boy who just recently came from a Christian-loving family.
Wow, Oscar. I didn't even mention some advantages of family earlier, but can you give me some examples?
Yes, I can. Some soldiers were able to cope with the war through letters to family. The letters could be shipped back and forth, allowing for easy access to the loved ones, which was a great example of an advantage during the Civil War and how they were able to maintain their faith. William Ross Stilwell was a private during the Civil War, and he wrote to his wife back and forth many times during this war. It's actually from the Civil War archives. It's titled, "I Know You Must Be Very Uneasy About Me." But a quote from one of these letters is, "I saw almost all the fighting the 5 days, more than I ever expected to see again. But believe me, many a good and brave woman who could say husband last Saturday morning when they rose were widows. And when the sun set, and many children that could say father were orphans. Oh, that God would intercede and give us peace once more. But his will be done, and not ours. I have given you all the particulars that I can remember. For further accounts, refer to the paper. Let us be thankful to God for his favors, and pray for a continuation of the same." Through these letters, soldiers were able to voice their prayers and attempt to let the outside world know what is going on in the battles. This made it easier for some of the soldiers to keep faith during this hard time.
Sir, let's switch it up a little bit. I know there's a loss of faith in Civil War, but how were the losses of faith in Vietnam different?
I actually did read something about that. A Vietnam Vet's Journey from Hell to Healing by Annie Grubber. Now, this article talks about how a Vietnam veteran, Hasha Riley, lost himself in the horrors of war. And he actually gave a great quote in which I used. It was, "Selling and stealing, robbing and hijacking, anything that wasn't nailed down, was how he described his larceny ring. Using dock workers who also patronized his opium den. There was nothing that couldn't be sold in Southeast Asia at that time. Sea rations, flak jackets, batteries, trucks, jeeps, guns, bullets, sides of beef, pellets, aluminum siding. I even tried to sell a hot helicopter one time." You know, that just really exemplifies how the loss of faith in Vietnam was just so much different than the loss of faith in the Civil War. For example, the Civil War loss of faith was just gambling or swearing. But, you know, at the time of Vietnam, it was drugs, and you just fell into this very deep and dark hole. He even described that hole as hell-like, hellish. Now, it really does just help support my main topic and all that. Through these temptations of the war, this soldier lost almost all connection to war. Addictions took over, and images he saw were truly scarring. It took years until after the war that the soldier made attempts to reconnect to God. Versus the Civil War, where soldiers, during the second year of the war, started to turn towards their faith again. He gave another example of his, you know, loss of faith, and this actually played a big part, which is it's actually kind of scary to read. "I've got my arms extended before me with a pistol held in a two-handed grip, extra magazines held in my mouth. There's nothing I need to talk about as I take the slack off the trigger and squeeze off the shot. I watch Mr. Trang's head deflate as the .45 slug eats his way through the brain, tossing the residue of blood, bone, and brain around the room." This just shows the mental, you know, like he explained all this, how the mental, like, problems came just hand in hand with this war. He just said it was just brutal and totally different than any war today.
Now, Oscar, let's go back to the Civil War. How were Civil War preachers implemented in the war?
Well, in the article I read, A Minister Keeps His Faith by Reverend B. Fahman. Okay. It's about Civil War preachers during this time. In 1861 and 1862, hundreds and thousands of Americans flocked to volunteer for themselves into companies and regiments. Many of them enlisted had already been introduced to the most common type of religion in the Civil War armies, evangelical Protestant Christianity. And a lot of these soldiers, okay, let's just go back. A lot of these soldiers, when they joined, they wanted to become preachers so they could help other soldiers, you know, maintain the faith with God so they didn't lose hope and, you know, go all suicidal like that. Many soldiers, like Mr. Varnum, who the article is about, were encouraged to enlist to keep their faith during the war. Some of these men became preachers who traveled to different war sites to perform prayer services and listen to worn-out soldiers. During this time period, these men were very important to the, you know, success of the soldiers', you know, well-being. They came, they preached, and they allowed the soldier to relieve some of the stress and some of the anxiety they had built up because of the war.
Wow, Oscar, that's very interesting. Now, how was war from the citizen's standpoint?
That's very interesting. From the citizen's standpoint, the war was, you know, all an act of God. Even the South and the North both believed this. They believed that God was on their side, and this is what needed to happen. And God was guiding them throughout the war. Many of the soldiers were able to keep strong faith in their religion because citizens were volunteering to preach and help hold prayer services for the soldiers. You know, through this, and also citizens were able to implement themselves through the exchange of letters and whatnot. You know, they always gave support to their family members and support to the other soldiers of the war. Another thing they did was they built churches. They helped volunteer to build churches and chapels for soldiers to continue to preach and to keep their strong faith to God and support them through all of their hard times.
Now, Oscar, I know we're running a little short on time, but how are the Union and Confederate sides involved with the soldiers' faith?
So, both sides of the armies tried to keep their soldiers faithful. For example, many log churches were erected at the start of the war in preparation for soldiers to be able to preach or pray. At the start of the war, there was a much smaller attendance than the second year of the war. Based off this trend, I could deduce that the soldiers began to rely more and more on faith, their religions, you know, as times got harder and they saw more horrors of the war and all this stuff. Actually, a quote I got from Mr. Rabel, he wrote Crisis of Faith. His full name is George C. Rabel. He said, after Robert E. Lee's army returned to Virginia following the retreat from Gettysburg, chaplains began organizing sunrise prayer meetings followed by conversations with inquirers at 10 and preaching at 11. Interdenominational Christian associations conducted nighttime prayer services. Visiting ministers and lay leaders helped make the winter of 1863-64 a high point in the army evangelism. Camp revivals reportedly reached the indifferent and prodded the faithful. Then the discouraged Confederates had every reason to welcome the gospel message, and the end of the campaign season, as usual, provided an opportune time. It just shows that both sides of the armies cared for their soldiers very much. They wanted them to be like the best moral stance they could be in. And, you know, it just really showed how much they really cared for their soldiers. And, you know, they even erected churches. They spent their money on that kind of stuff so their soldiers could be comfortable and, you know, try to reason with them. Well, Henry, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Oscar.
This is all the time we have for today on this topic. I'm pretty sure we covered it pretty well. But, hey, thank you.
Thank you.
And have a good day. Next podcast, how to take 4 finals and fail them all at once. Stay tuned.